It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I regret that they've chosen to hold these hearings at the same time that the president and our entire national security team will be traveling to Europe, to London, to work on these important matters. It's very unfortunate.
But there's nothing that keeps him from sending a lawyer there to question these experts just because he happens to be in London.
The do-nothing Democrats decided when I'm going to NATO, this was set up a year ago, for them to be doing this and saying this and putting an impeachment on the table, which is a hoax to start off with.
He's going to take someone from proven ability. That's the president calling me. Tell him I'm president. He wants to go to NATO. He wants to know who our NATO allies are. He hasn't figured it out.
Yeah, interesting. That reminds me of what I told you yesterday about my grandson asking me why people make fun of Donald Trump. He asked me that. He's in Scotland and he doesn't hear much news. But that's Joe Biden, of course, making fun of Donald Trump. Is so dumb. You know, he doesn't even know who our NATO partners are. You know, he's dumb like a fox. I mean, we see what's happening to the economy. We see how he is courageously defending the protesters in Hong Kong. We see what he's done to defend human life in the womb, to defund Planned Parenthood. Yeah, he's pretty dumb. And that's why they mock him. They mock him because they can't fight him any other way. They try to diminish him by doing that. But that's really not the point of that clip. I wanted you to understand that the president today is in London. He's there for the NATO summit meeting. He's meeting with the Queen tonight. He and other world leaders at the palace. And it is NATO. NATO was formed, of course, 70 years ago, and it was a response to World War II. It was a way for European allies and the United States to unite and protect each other from Russia, because they did not trust Joseph Stalin. Can't imagine why they would not trust him and the revolution, but that's how it started. And they agreed that they would protect each other from any attack from Russia, and that they would band together. That attack on one was an attack on all. But it's gotten messy because now we have Turkey, who's part of NATO. Turkey, under Erdogan, has become a completely unreliable partner. Erdogan is an Islamist himself. In fact, another report last night, I'm not sure we'll get to it, but Gillian Turner talked about how ISIS is trying to, after the death of al-Baghdadi, they're trying to regenerate themselves, and many of their top leaders have fled to, guess where? Turkey. So now Turkey and Russia are actually working together on developing oil supplies because of the sanctions of the West. So it's getting messy, and NATO is—it's the face of NATO is changing, and many of its partners are feeling very uneasy. And the president has demanded that members of NATO actually support NATO, and like France, and Great Britain, that they step up to the plate and pay their part. It's not up to the United States to protect and defend all the countries of Europe in this post-war era where they are very prosperous. And so that's kind of a very thumbnail sketch of what's happening. Greg Palcott is there in London. He gave a good report this morning on Fox and Friends, so let's listen.
Never accuse President Trump of not being a multitasker. As we speak right now, he's headed towards, believe it or not, a small fundraiser on the edge of Hyde Park. But this is an event marking the 70th anniversary of NATO. And in fact, President Trump met with the Secretary General of NATO, Jan Stoltenberg. It was a press availability in the President Trump style. He talked about domestic issues, of course, calling the impeachment hearings once again a hoax, saying it was not good for the Democrats to run this while he was over here doing important government business. But he talked about foreign affairs as well, saying that perhaps there might not be a Chinese trade deal until after the elections. And he did talk about NATO, said he was pleased that he was helping to change NATO and beef up the funding from the other member countries. He also blasted French President Emmanuel Macron for for some criticism of NATO. Listen to what he had to say.
Nobody needs NATO more than France. You just look back over the last long period of time. Nobody needs NATO more than France. And frankly, the one that benefits really the least is the United States. We benefit the least. We're helping Europe. Europe unites and they go against a common foe. That may or may not be a foe. Can't tell you that.
Yeah, so that's the first part. Of course, blasting Macron is just speaking the truth. They don't want to pay their part, but they don't, you know, France is on the cusp. They are the leaders of the socialist left. I don't know if, you know, if you had to put Germany and France together, I'm not sure which one would be further to the left. Scotland would be in there too. But certainly France is just, Macron is a committed socialist, and the country, remember all those protests by the regular people, the middle class, just a year ago, we were talking about that almost every day. Because Macron fully embraces the whole climate change nonsense, and by that I mean the nonsense that man has hardly anything to do with the change of the climate. God himself set the heavens in motion, and we've always had climate change. Yes, I get a little upset when I think about how they've twisted that. So Macron has embraced that, and by embracing it, it means that you break the backs of your people with high energy prices because it's their fault that they buy so much gas and oil and they heat their homes and they do regular things. It's their fault that there's climate change. That's basically what it is. Meanwhile, Macron and the elites, they do fine. They do just fine because they have lots of money. And so that's where the divide becomes, and you have a rich class and a poor class, and the middle class has its back broken. That's what's happening in France. So President is speaking out about that. They're not willing to fund NATO, but they sure do like the protections of NATO. And President Trump is saying, no more. We're not doing that anymore. Greg Palcott had a part two to his report on NATO. Let's listen.
And now security here in London beefed up for President Trump's visit, along with all 29 NATO leaders. There was that terror attack, the knifing at the London Bridge last Friday. And there will be added security around Buckingham Palace tonight. That's when the president and NATO leaders are expected to meet the Queen and other royals. And yes, there will be an anti-Trump protest there. Finally, guys, there was also mention of Boris Johnson, the UK prime minister, in this press availability. There will be a reception tonight at number 10 Downing Street where President Trump will meet his friend Boris Johnson. Now, Johnson has an election next week, and he was pushed on whether he favored Prime Minister Johnson. He stayed remarkably neutral on this, probably because his favorability rating here in the UK right now is at about 18%. He does not want to hurt his ally. There are more meetings later in the day, and yes, this big event marking the important NATO anniversary. Well, that's tomorrow. A lot more time to make a whole lot more news.
Yeah, so the president of the United States has an 18% approval rate in London. That's what Palcott is saying. Or Great Britain. And that's, of course, why my grandson, who's in Scotland, is asking me why people make fun of Donald Trump. But, of course, they get a steady diet of the BBC. And their leftist media, the BBC is to the left. It's probably even with the New York Times. They do horrendous reporting. They've been so hostile for so many years. I remember being a guest on the BBC many times in the past and doing verbal combat with them. And I remember, of course, hearing their listen, they do some great reporting on other things, but they have a political bias. They're all in on the left's view of climate change and all of that. And the people there are just they're propagandized. They just are. And sadly, you know, Fox News is not in Great Britain anymore. I don't know how that happened. But when Fox kind of entered the scene over there, it made a huge difference and helped people to learn other points of view, but no more. And so that's the report out of England. You'll be hearing more about that tonight. You can imagine the pictures you'll be seeing from the palace and all of that. So the president is there, of course, carrying on some very important business. Meanwhile, back here in the States, lots of things to report. So how shall I begin this? Let's just say that today we are expecting that the report out of Adam Schiff's committee on the potential impeachment of President Trump is expected to be presented. It'll be leaked throughout the day. I'm sure it will be. Then tomorrow, the baton is being passed to the Judiciary Committee under Gerald Nadler, and they will gavel into official impeachment inquiry hearings. And they announced yesterday, at least yesterday, finally, who their testifiers will be. Mike Emanuel had a good report on that last night on Fox. Let's listen.
Lawmakers are getting their first look at the Democrats' report this hour. Republicans have already put out a 123-page report. In it, they write, quote, "The Democrats' impeachment inquiry is not the organic outgrowth of serious misconduct. It is an orchestrated campaign to upend our political system." Then on Wednesday, the scene shifts to the House Judiciary Committee for its first public hearing. Gerald Nadler is the Democrat chairman. Doug Collins is the Republican ranking member. That first hearing is expected to focus on the historical and constitutional basis for impeachment. The witness list released late today: Noah Feldman from Harvard Law School, Pamela Karlan from Stanford Law School, Michael Gerhardt from the University of North Carolina School of Law, and Jonathan Turley from the George Washington University School of Law, a familiar face for our viewers. President Trump has decided not to send attorneys to this first hearing, perhaps at a later date.
All right, and then it gets more interesting because, and I actually want to get into this probably in greater detail than I will be able to on this side of the break, but Mike goes ahead and reports an interesting thing that's happening with attorney Lisa Page, the one that had the affair with Peter Strzok, whose text messages gave us tremendous insight into what the FBI was doing and how they were trying to undermine and sabotage and resist the presidency of Donald Trump. Lisa Page is now coming out defending herself, and this is what Mike had to say about that, clip six.
Lisa Page is breaking her silence nearly 2 years after her personal text messages made her a public figure. Page is defending her texts with Peter Strzok, with whom she was having an affair at the time, telling the Daily Beast, quote, "Having an opinion and sharing that opinion publicly or privately with another person is squarely within the permissible bounds of the Hatch Act. It's in the regs." Those texts with Strzok included two in August of 2016 when she texts him, "Trump's not ever going to become president, right? Right?" Strzok responds, "No, no, he's not. We'll stop it." And in a text later that same month, Strzok texts Page, "I want to believe the path you threw out for consideration in Andy's office, that there's no way he gets elected, but I'm afraid we can't take the risk. It's like an insurance policy in the unlikely event you die before you're 40. Page says her decision to go public came after President Trump mimicked her and Strzok at an October rally.
"I love you, Peter. I love you too, Lisa. Lisa, I love you. Lisa. Lisa. And if she doesn't win, Lisa, we've got an insurance policy, Lisa."
Page says the release of the messages was a slap in the face and chosen with a purpose in mind. Those texts were selected for their political impact, she told the Daily Beast. They lack a lot of context. Her public comments come as Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz is expected to release his report on the Russia investigation 1 week from today.
I kind of think that it's going to be pretty hard-hitting. I think that we're going to see a lot of misconduct on the part of senior leaders in the FBI and DOJ with regard to obtaining FISA warrants. We're going to see failure to allow exculpatory evidence.
President Trump has already responded to Page's interview today, doubling down on Page's text with Strzok talking about an insurance policy in case Clinton loses.
Yes, and there's a really interesting article, which I'll try to cover in 45 seconds here. Nick Nolte, writing for Breitbart, talks about the interview that Lisa Page did with the Daily Beast. And basically, he titles it Lisa Page's Disastrously Dishonest Daily Beast Interview. You know, I'm going to have to stop. I do want to get into that at least a little bit and just illustrate to you. Here's the thing. Lisa Page is the one who altered something in Michael Flynn's case that, as far as we can tell, was the setup for him to be convicted and to have to admit that he did admit to lying under oath when we don't think he actually did do that. And Lisa Page had a big hand in that. Of course, she claims that she did nothing wrong. She did nothing wrong. And so ahead of this report that's coming out next Monday, and I have a lot to say about that report, too, so hang on. Lisa seems to be trying to get ahead of the pack, declaring her innocence, and I'll get into that in just a second. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. I am currently reading a book titled 1776 by David McCullough. I would highly recommend this book about our country's founding. It's been on my to-do list for 10 years, and I finally got around to it. But an excellent book it is, and a lot of it's about the life of George Washington. What an amazing story. Without George Washington, I doubt I would be talking to you today. That's how instrumental and important he was to our country's founding. He was a man used by God. We're going to be going to Mount Vernon, his home, on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June and September. Our tours in June and September, Spiritual Heritage Tours, to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. And then we're going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour. For all the information, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, that's spiritualheritagetours.com.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for James Owens, Deputy Administrator for the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. He oversees their mission of saving lives, preventing injuries, and reducing vehicle-related crashes. Proverbs 16:9 reminds us of the Lord's guidance in our daily path. The heart of man plans his way, but the Lord establishes his steps. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for James Owens as he works to protect the American traveler. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team. This Christmas season, send a prayer or Christmas greeting to President Trump and his family. Your message will be delivered straight to the Oval Office. It's fun, easy, and it's free. Learn how at pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of Champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
Should girls wrestle boys? That question has caused lots of debate in Western New York State, and it led the Lancaster Central School Board to sever ties with a well-known physician. Dr. Michael Terranova refused to give a 12-year-old girl medical clearance to wrestle on a boys' junior varsity wrestling team. The doctor wrote on her form that girls do not play boys' sports in Lancaster schools. So the school board voted unanimously to sever ties with Dr. Terranova. The doctor denied he had discriminated against the child. He said his decision was motivated by concerns about safety and physical maturity. The school district says girls can do anything boys can do. Well, if that's true, why doesn't the high school field a football team made up primarily of female athletes? And for that matter, why not let boys play on the girls' basketball team if, as the school district says, everyone is equal? I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I know, it's really hard to believe it's December, isn't it? It's hard for me to remember that. In fact, I'll say to my producer right now, we should be playing Christmas bumpers. We will do that. I think, you know, I got kind of off the track being out of the country, and so we're going to get back on track, and we'll make it, we will create the atmosphere and just enjoy Christmas music. We'll start that again tomorrow. So in regard to that, you know, AFA is on a mission to really make sure that people understand what Christmas is all about. It's a wonderful mission, actually, and every year we produce these buttons that you can order. And this time, this year, the button says, Jesus, he came for you. Jesus, he came for you. And, of course, it's beautifully decorated. And the point of it, even if you don't say anything to people, it's a conversation starter. And also just puts the Jesus back in the conversation. And makes people cognizant as they shop and go about their business that Jesus did come for them. That is the message of Christmas. And so if you would like these buttons, you can get them by calling 877-927-4917. They're great gifts, and they're great to wear. They're also to give to your family and your friends. 877-927-4917, or go to the afastore.net. That's afastore.net. And that's how you can get those beautiful buttons. We were talking about Lisa Page, and she is now coming out publicly. Again, she's the attorney who was having the extramarital affair with Peter Strzok, who was the lead, one of the lead investigators on that attempt at the FBI, really, to undermine and destroy the presidency. I don't know how else to say it. I think it's pretty apparent in reading their text that that's actually what did happen. And they said in there, if I can find, this is what she writes, or Strzok writes to her in August of 2016. I want to believe that there's no way Trump gets elected, but I'm afraid we can't take that risk. It's like an insurance policy in the unlikely event you die before you're 40. So the question has always been, what is that insurance policy? What were you guys talking about? Well, we have a better idea now. And as the Inspector General's report comes out next Monday, and he testifies on Capitol Hill next Wednesday, I'm sure we'll hear more about that. And I think that's very likely the reason why Lisa Page is suddenly feeling the need to speak out. She gave an interview for the Daily Beast, which is what used to be Newsweek. And it is, yes, a far-left publication. John Nolte, I said Nick Nolte early. Nick Nolte's an actor. John Nolte is a writer. And so John wrote an article for Breitbart, and he had some very interesting observations. He listened and watched or read all of Lisa's interview. And he says, as you might expect, the Daily Beast's Molly Young Fast did not exactly cover herself in journalistic glory with this interview. What you have here is stenography, or the disgraceful act of the purported news outlet turning itself completely over to Page, allowing her to say whatever she likes without challenge, without being asked even a single tough question, or to clarify countless contradictions. And then he says, the good news, though, is that Page uses the Daily Beast's rope to hang herself. Rather than help herself, she comes off as a bitter, deeply dishonest, and rabidly partisan. And then he goes and makes several different points, which I'd like to bring to your attention. Lisa Page claims that her notorious texts were taken out of context. This is what she said in the interview. She said, and of course, you know, these texts were selected for their political impact. They lack a lot of context. Many of them aren't even about him or me. We're not given an opportunity to provide any context. But here's the problem. There are many, many more texts between Lisa Page and Peter Strzok, and they're refusing to release them. So John just says, why then aren't you calling for the public release of all your texts? If you want us to have context, then we should have the texts that surround them, and we could figure out what it is you're talking about and why the insurance policy and your hatred for Donald Trump put into context would mean less. And, of course, the Daily Beast didn't ask about any of that. And then there also, to make that point, there was a second phone that Peter Strzok used with Lisa Page. And interestingly enough, Robert Mueller, during their alleged ridiculous investigation of all of this, deleted all the text messages from that phone before turning it over to the Department of Justice. So we don't know what those texts say, and we never will know, unless we find out from Lisa, because she probably still has them. I'm still here. Sorry, struggling with allergies this morning. And so then they talk about that insurance policy, but they never really tell us what that insurance policy is. And the Daily Beast, of course, does not bother to ask Lisa what they were talking about. And then, as I mentioned earlier, it was Lisa Page, as far as we can tell, who substantially altered the report of Michael Flynn's FBI interview, which is the one that ended up damning him in court. Now, of course, that case is not over. And I told you yesterday, the Justice Department is asking the judge in General Flynn's case not to rule until their report is released. And so it's just a very interesting situation. And then, of course, John wants to know why the Daily Beast did not ask Lisa Page, why did Robert Mueller fire you? She claims in her interview, of course, that she did nothing. She did nothing. I did nothing wrong. She says that her hatred for Donald Trump had nothing to do with the effectiveness and her ability to do her job. She says that those thousands of texts in no way violated FBI policy. And that's just not, these are my words, that's just not true. Anytime you are working in law enforcement, or especially when you get as high up as the FBI and the legal department there, and you start having an affair with anyone, you are compromised. It makes you the object, it can make you the object of blackmail and compromise, and you just, it's not okay. And so she's wrong about that. I do think there's probably a culture in the FBI now that didn't used to be. FBI agents used to be some of the, they were not they didn't lead with Christianity, but they did lead with morality. It was really frowned upon in the FBI to divorce your wife or to have affairs. But I think that's different now. Under the culture Robert Mueller put in place and James Comey continued, it seemed to happen pretty frequently, I have to say. But it's not okay, and it does not abridge FBI policy. It is still officially against the policy. Lisa Page is angry that the FBI didn't defend her. So John says this, let me get this straight. You use government property paid for by U.S. taxpayers to cover up your extramarital affair. You scheme about an insurance policy to take down the president of the United States. And you want the FBI to defend you? And then, of course, it goes on and on. There's a lot of things in here about the Hillary Clinton investigation. I'm not going to complete that because I have so many things, other things to tell you. But we'll put this article on our Facebook page by John Nolte, Lisa Page's Disastrously Dishonest Daily Beast interview. And you can read it, the rest of it, for yourself because there's quite a bit left. I have to get to the big story of the day. And that is, we are, of course, waiting for the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, to release his report. And that will be released next Monday, as we have said. There's so many reports. Who can keep up, really? Like, we know that, again, the Adam Schiff report is being released today on the impeachment inquiry. And they'll start their hearings tomorrow with the various attorneys or legal law professors talking about impeachment. That's going to be the hearing. And then next Monday, Michael Horowitz's report, the Inspector General, about the FBI's role in getting a FISA application for Carter Page. I think that's primarily Michael Horowitz's purview on this. It's a 500-page report, so it should be pretty interesting. But here's the thing. The Washington Post released an article yesterday evening or afternoon. I think it was evening. 7:21 p.m. last night, because I know I didn't see it until this morning. And it says, Attorney General William Barr has told associates he disagrees with the Justice Department's Inspector General on one of the key findings in an upcoming report, that the FBI had enough information in July of 2016 to justify launching an investigation into members of the Trump campaign. Now, this Washington Post article goes on. It says, behind the scenes at the Justice Department, disagreement has surfaced about one of Horowitz's central conclusions on the origins of the Russia investigation. The discord could be the prelude to a major fissure within federal law enforcement on the controversial question of investigating a presidential campaign. Now, I've already told you that there is a lot of speculation about what Michael Horowitz's report is going to say. And we talked yesterday about how the press, the New York Times and the Washington Post, are already leaking parts of it, alleging that they know. They're making it sound as though there's not going to be anything in there. It's just going to be, basically in this article, they're saying that Michael Horowitz is going to show that the FBI had every reason to investigate the president. They had enough evidence. And it's telling you in various ways, and I'll get into some of those, that the Attorney General, William Barr, vociferously disagrees that the FBI did not have the legal reasons to investigate. And so this is all the talk today, and it's going to be more of it. And I will get into it, but I want to, before I get too far, because I know some of you come in and out with your listening. In my inbox just before I got on the air was an article from the Washington Examiner. I haven't even had a chance to really read this. But the headline is, Lindsey Graham, be wary of rumors about a rift between William Barr and DOJ Inspector General Michael Horowitz ahead of the FISA report. Lindsey told Sean Hannity he warned them that the findings in the watchdog investigation into alleged surveillance abuses against former Trump campaign advisor Carter Page are being minimized by the media outlets getting the leaks. Be wary of the Washington Post and the New York Times reporting on what is coming up with Horowitz. They've been trying to overtime to spin this thing to diminish its effect, to downplay it. I can tell you without any hesitation, Attorney General Barr has every confidence in the world in Mr. Horowitz. All right, now that let me just interject now before I'm not even going to read any more of this, because this is what I know for what it's worth about this. A lot of people who are on the side of defending President Trump, who see the deep state very clearly, many of them part of the deep state themselves have been, understand it. do not trust Michael Horowitz. They think he is very much a part of the deep state. And while he postures, kind of like, it's kind of like that. Now, this, I'm just giving you their side of the story. Just as though, as Robert Mueller was a hero, man of integrity, impeccable, can do no wrong, a resume that's just beyond the pale. And so he's chosen to be, you know, the special counsel on the investigation of President Trump. And then we learned that, well, he's not so special after all, actually. Just like I just told you about the Lisa Page, Peter Strzok, a second phone. The Mueller investigation team scrubs those emails, scrubs the text, I mean, before they hand them off, so that the inspector general doesn't have those to do his investigation. That's just one thing. Coming out of the Mueller team, there were so many horrible things and so much twisting. And so Bob Mueller has proven to be not such a straight-up guy after all. And that's what a lot of people think about Michael Horowitz. And we see the same kind of bragging about what a great guy he is, what a wonderful, impeccable. We've had General Barr. He has really praised Michael Horowitz in the past, and so that's true. But if you want a hunch from me, I'll give you a hunch. First of all, Lindsey Graham is look. He gets a lot of things right, but he gets just as many things wrong. And so if I put stock. I wish I could put more stock in the things he says, but I don't really trust his judgment. And I don't trust Washington Post either. So I think from the people that I hear from that Michael Horowitz likely is part of that whole system. And why wouldn't he be? He's been there forever in D.C. where you try to play both sides against the middle. It's the same way Rod Rosenstein was. If this side's to be team seems to be leading, then I'll butter up to that side. If this team seems to be leading, I'll butter up to that side. Trying to be, remain part of the bureaucracy. That's what I think. That's what I really think Michael Horowitz is. And so I actually would be more surprised when I've heard in the past few days this is going to be a barn burner. It's going to, heads are going to roll, whatever the verbiage. I've been skeptical. And so I remain skeptical, and I don't kind of, I think maybe, the Washington Post may very likely have a lot of this right. But we'll see. I don't know either. And surely, wouldn't you think that Lindsey Graham would know better than I? So I know he would know better than I. I'm not even putting that up for speculation. But we'll see. But let me go back to that Washington Post article, because they're the ones, telling us all these juicy tidbits about the upcoming report. They talk about this big rift between Bill Barr and Michael Horowitz on the whole issue of whether the FBI had a reason, had justification to surveil the Trump team. So I'm going to go to the article here and read part of it to you. The Russia investigation was opened after the FBI was told of statements made by a then-Trump campaign aide, George Papadopoulos, that the Russians possessed hacked Hillary Clinton email. His comments were key because they were made well before a public allegation that Russian intelligence operatives had hacked the DNC committee. But to see what they don't add to that is we know that George Papadopoulos was set up by Stephen Halper, by Joseph Mifsud, who now who's disappeared, by the way. He's a Maltese shady figure who has worked with the British. And he's also, as I understand it, worked with the FBI. And the FBI tried to present him as a Russian spy, and it was... it was these two guys who planted the story with George Papadopoulos and then happened to show up in a bar and ask him questions. And George had just been told by one of them that the Russians had been responsible for hacking Hillary Clinton's emails because one of them told him that and he's repeating it to the other one. And so they use that as an excuse to set up their investigation. So I think I've kind of conveyed to you the main part of this. They're saying that Michael Horowitz is going to say that the FBI was justified in doing the investigation. They don't go into the details about, remember we heard yesterday that one of the FBI agents actually altered the evidence to present to the FISA court with the help of one attorney at the FBI and one at Justice. An incredible story. So I don't know, but we're going to find out next Monday when the report comes out. When we come back, I'm going to change the subject to something that I think is something that's every day in your lives and mine too. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
David, the son of Jesse, just an ordinary giant slayer. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. David's battle with Goliath is an epic drama where the little boy stands in God's power to conquer the Philistine giant. David didn't awaken that morning expecting to slay a giant. He didn't stroll in with an entourage after a rugged mountain range training camp like Rocky and Rocky IV. He was just a regular kid bringing his brothers lunch, but fully confident in God's immeasurable power. Though he saw Goliath, David never acknowledged him as a giant, saying, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine who dared defy the Lord of hosts?" When regular people are fully persuaded, fully confident in God's power, giants fall.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Ah, Christmas. The time of year we gather together to celebrate the birth of Jesus. We hang our decorations, cook our food, and wrap our gifts. Speaking of gifts, the AFA Naughty or Nice retailer list is now available. So as you do your shopping, you can make sure you support those that support Christmas. Visit AFA.net to find the AFA Naughty or Nice retailer list. And make sure you keep Christ in Christmas.
Folks, you know, I used to be a football fan. I stopped being a football fan. I could not stand the idea of people denigrating that flag and refusing to stand for it. My attitude about folks like that is, please leave. You ought to be thanking God every day of your life that you were born an American. I know that my country's not perfect, but I still love America.
Tune in to The Awakening, weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Democrats continue their shampeachment this week, an act born out of desperation. They realize that they cannot defeat Donald Trump at the ballot box, so they have launched a bloodless coup d'etat against him. But their impeachment attempt is predicated on something for which no one has ever been impeached before in American history, thought crimes. They are seeking to remove the president from office not for what he did, but for what he was thinking. He did not withhold aid from Ukraine, he only thought about it. Ukraine got every last penny of our promised $391 million to assist it in defending itself against Russia, something which President Obama never did. We don't penalize people for thought crimes in America, and we most certainly do not remove presidents from office for what they were thinking either.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The United States is taking a lot of flack these days for pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord. At this week's 25th annual UN hand-wringing session about global warming in Madrid, nations will compete to demonstrate their superior commitment to preventing ice caps from melting, sea levels rising, pestilence spreading, and conflicts erupting, among other apocalyptic scenarios. House Speaker Pelosi is using the opportunity to excoriate President Trump. Meanwhile, Mr. Trump is being vindicated with regard to one of his reasons for withdrawing from the Paris Agreement, namely that it required the U.S. to make onerous cuts in CO2 emissions, but communist China can continue adding to its pollution. In fact, Beijing is greatly increasing its numbers of coal-burning power plants and dramatically reducing its investment in renewables. Good on Americans for continuing voluntarily to cut our emissions. China will not. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The backlash has been swift and far-reaching after Chick-fil-A announced plans to stop making donations to groups that oppose gay marriage. This after long-running opposition from the LGBTQ community. The chain says it will no longer give to the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and the Salvation Army, instead focusing on specific initiatives like hunger, homelessness, and education. Dan Celia, host of the Christian radio show Financial Issues, told CBN News that Chick-fil-A is abandoning its loyal supporters to appease a group that will never be satisfied.
I think Dan Caffey and others have grown weary of the battle. Just fighting constantly. And I think that is a discouragement to so many people and their base.
But not everyone is criticizing the chain's decision. Alveda King, niece of slain civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., says people shouldn't rush to judgment.
Chick-fil-A, of course, with Truett Cathy, he gave that to us, he and his wife, a very strong legacy. So we don't want to see the legacy fall apart or anything like that. But rather than fall apart and begin to pick people apart for decisions and choices that they're making, we just need to pray.
It's been a long battle since Chick-fil-A top executive Dan Cathy publicly expressed his views on biblical marriage 7 years ago. That unleashed a fury of protests across the country by supporters of gay marriage. Gay activists held what they called kiss-ins. That hostility continues today.
All right, that was a report from CBN, and that's a story that it came out at a time when all these other things were happening in the news. And I personally feel like we needed to have a discussion about this. So I want to fill you in on what we know more about Chick-fil-A. Initially, I think many of us wondered if this was a mistake or if maybe we were misunderstanding the change in trajectory. You know, was there something behind this that we weren't quite understanding? Because they basically said they were changing their trajectory and they wanted to help, what, education, poverty, organizations that were really effective with that. So they stopped giving to three entities. It was Salvation Army, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and Paul Anderson Youth Home. But I have to say, we are learning a great deal more about this. I want to read to you what we knew when last we talked about this. Tim Tassopoulos is the president and COO of Chick-fil-A, and he said in the statement that the company's goal is to donate to the most effective organizations in the areas of education, homelessness, and hunger. And then he said no organization will be excluded from future consideration, faith-based or non-faith-based. So in other words, we're going to be fair. We're going to evaluate each organization. That's what basically I think what they're trying to say. There's no question. We know that as we go into new markets, we need to be clear about who we are. There are a lot of articles and newscasts about Chick-fil-A, and we thought we needed to be clear about our message. Well, all right. So we still weren't really clear about that message, but we are clearer now. And that's why I wanted to bring it up to you again, because I wanted my audience to understand what's actually happening here, because it's a great deal worse than we actually thought. That's all I can say. And I'll give you the proof. Ryan Baumgartner, Baumberger, who he's a black pro-life activist, a friend of mine. He's just dynamite. Ryan is. And he did some research on this, and this is what he found. First of all, you might remember that back in 2012, when gay marriage was still under consideration, that the president, the CEO of Chick-fil-A, Dan Cathy, came out with a statement. This is what he said. We are based on biblical principles, asking God and pleading with God to give us wisdom on decisions we make about people and the programs and partnerships we have. And he has blessed us. And so, you know, Chick-fil-A is closed on Sundays. They have donated to Christian organizations faithfully, including, I remember what great partners there were. They were when I was in D.C. with Concerned Women for America. Little things, like they would provide food for meetings and lunches. It was just a sweet synergy. It was very nice because there are so few businesses who have a statement of faith like that, or close on Sundays. And so when the SPLC started producing their lists of hate groups, and of course AFA is top of the list, Family Research Council is, you know, down in the Fs, we are in the As. I myself have been declared a person of hate by the Southern Poverty Law Center, as has Ben Carson and many, many others I could list. But the AFA singled out Christian ministries and created this hate list. And as a result of that, this guy named Floyd Corkins, as you will recall, took the SPLC, Southern Poverty Law Center hate map, found FRC on 7th Street in Washington, D.C., got heavily armed himself, 50 rounds of ammunition. He bought lots of 50 chick. I think it was, he had a backpack filled with Chick-fil-A sandwiches. And he went in the door. We know the story. I know you know the story, but I have to retell it. And he started firing. And the security guard took the first bullet. It really destroyed his left arm, but he's kept fighting. And after Floyd Corkin was brought down by the security guard and went in to do his interview, he freely admitted that he'd gotten the hate map from the SPLC. He was mad because there was, remember that day of appreciation for Chick-fil-A when many of us drove however far we had to drive to go to Chick-fil-A and stay, be in line and give them as much business as possible because of their courageous stand on the issue of marriage. In fact, many say that that was sort of the turning point for Chick-fil-A. That's why they've become the number three fast food restaurant in the world, because that was a turning point. Well, ironically, while we were all so in concert with Chick-fil-A and grateful, and Floyd Corkins used this Southern Poverty Law Center hate map, which identified FRC, for their support of Chick-fil-A, Floyd goes in, he's going to commit mass murder in FRC. If it hadn't been for the security guard, there would have been a mass murder. And what he wanted to do was stuff Chick-fil-A sandwiches in the mouths of the employees at FRC. So now we know this because of Ryan Baumberger's reporting that in 2017, just 5 years later, Chick-fil-A donated money to the same corrupt SPLC that outrageously listed FRC, AFA, Sandy Rios. I'm just saying my name because you know me, but there are a lot of other people who have the privilege of being haters, as labeled by this Southern Poverty Law Center. and they donate money to the very organization that created this list, part of it in response to Dan Cathy's statements on marriage, and then all of us came out and supported Chick-fil-A, then we're targeted again, fiercely, viciously targeted with these hate maps. Floyd Corkin uses it and goes in and tries to commit mass murder, and then Chick-fil-A turns around and donates to the SPLC. They didn't tell us that part, did they? And so I'm going to go on. It just so happens that the same three groups targeted for years by the LGBT organizations as anti-LGBT hate groups are the Salvation Army, the Paul Anderson Youth Home, and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. All three of those targeted by the SPLC. And that's who now, ironically, the Chick-fil-A's decided to let their agreements, their donation cycle run out on those organizations. But now you want to hear a little bit more. Salvation Army responded with this release. They said, "We're saddened to learn that a corporate partner has felt it necessary to divert funding to other hunger, education, and homelessness organizations. The Salvation Army does all three on a massive scale, but they don't espouse an LGBT ideology." In explaining Chick-fil-A's funding decision, Rodney Bullard, VP of Corporate Responsibility and Executive Director of the Chick-fil-A Foundation, said, "We don't want our intent and our work to be encumbered by someone else's politics or cultural war. If something gets in the way of our mission, that is something that we are mindful of and cognizant of." We know now that Rodney Bullard was a supporter of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. So now he's running the Chick-fil-A Foundation. And then Ryan in his article says, "Has Chick-fil-A's mission drifted way to the left? Out with organizations that do not espouse a pro-homosexuality ideology and in with those who do, like Covenant House." And so that's who they're donating to now, among others. And he says, "Don't let the Catholic Association fool you. Covenant House, a homeless shelter for youth, takes pride in its promotion of all things LGBTQ. They even marched in the New York City Gay Pride Parade to show their inclusivity cred. They also support Chick-fil-A funds the deeply political YWCA, radically pro-abortion and pro-LGBTQ organization that repeatedly partners with Planned Parenthood. Chick-fil-A also funds a D.C.-based New Leaders Council that identifies as a, quote, hub of progressive millennial thought leadership. Chick-fil-A has given a sizable donation, $50,000, to the PACE Center for Girls, another pro-abortion organization. And it is an education and advocacy group that featured radical pro-abortion feminist Gloria Steinem, the I Had an Abortion activist who declared that birthing children is the fundamental cause of climate change, as their keynote speaker for their most recent Girls Summit. I could go on and on. I'll just skip down. Chick-fil-A also gives tens of thousands to Chris 180, a pro-LGBT behavioral health and child welfare service agency. The organization boasts of being awarded the leader in supporting and serving LGBT families and youth from the Human Rights Campaign Foundation. The Human Rights Campaign is been a foe for me verbally for many, many years, and those of us that are pro-family and pro-biblical values. The Human Rights Campaign is the largest funded LGBT rights organization in the nation, millions and millions of dollars, based in D.C., and last year they were pushing for the legalization of prostitution. So that's who Chick-fil-A now is hanging out with, shall we say. There are a lot more things to say in that, but I want to read to you, here, let Matt Staver adds a few things. I want to add a few things that Matt adds. The founder of Covenant House, which Ryan refers to, is a Catholic priest pedophile who was sued for allegedly sexually abusing the youth who were seeking shelter and food. Covenant House proudly promotes LGBTQ on its website, referring to LGBTQ inclusion initiatives and even doing an inclusion assessment at every one of its facilities. And I could go. It also, Covenant House doesn't stop at LGBTQ activism. It also takes girls to abortion clinics. That's who Chick-fil-A is now supporting. Family Research Council has a scathing release that they issued November 27th, and they recount many of the things that I just said to you. And so Tony Perkins is saying it's time for Christians to find a fast food alternative to Chick-fil-A. And, of course, Tim Weierman, our president, before all we knew all of this, was already urging you to sign a petition to urge Chick-fil-A to return to its support for Christian ministries. Now, that petition, of course, was created before the news we got, but still, the Cathy family owns this. Surely they're not okay with their foundation supporting the kinds of things that we just heard and that I just recounted for you. If you want to know how you can sign this petition, go to afaaction.net, afaaction.net, and look for that petition and sign it. And I have to say, I have to then also, of course, bring in Russell Moore did on the November 19th when this story first broke. He wrote an article called Should You Be Angry at Chick-fil-A? And, of course, what he's advising is, this is typical of Russell Moore to me. He says a lot of things that make sense, but interjected in them are things that don't make sense at all. Basically, he's counseling that you do nothing, because after all, there are no Christian corporations. Well, I do know that that's true, that businesses and companies are pretty much amoral. However, it is possible for a company to embrace and adhere to Christian policies and to be friends, to be our brothers and sisters in Christ. Is there a problem? I mean, when Jesus was asking his disciples to go, you know, get a horse or a donkey or so he could ride it to the city, did he send them to a stranger or someone who hated him? No, they worked together. I don't know. I mean, we don't know who the person was, but I kind of doubt it was an enemy of the faith. There's nothing wrong with working together. And I think, you know, a lot of people, especially like Russell Moore, think that boycotts are unnecessary and they indicate that we have political power when that's not what we should be focusing on. I think that that in some part is true. But here's the thing. I think boycotts are for us. You know, I think of the scripture, he that knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin. I think we have to know that it's hard to know where to spend your money. That's true. But I can't, in good conscience, go to Disney. I haven't been able to in years. I did break that one time with my grandchildren. I couldn't believe. I'm just telling you. There are things that I can't do out of conscience because I know what they're doing. Chick-fil-A has betrayed their principles, and they've done great damage, I think, to the Christian community in their betrayal. And so I just can't, even though I love their salads, I can't go anymore. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.